Well, that was fun. The first games, the openers of the division series, they kind of pick up right where the wild card weekend left off, with some crazy rallies and some big time exclamation points, some stunning moments and comebacks, some strong pitching performances, and also I love it when we have unlikely, I don't want to say heroes. I hesitate to use that word in sports. We have unlikely, what's another good word? Don't tell me. I can figure this out. It is the hump show, so sometimes the words don't come as easy. We have unlikely stars, unlikely humans. Yes, that's the word right there. That narrows it down. We have unlikely clutch performers. I mean, it's a little awkward, but it works, right? Unlikely clutchers.
I'm human.
I mean, there goes the perfect show. We're not even 60 seconds in and pfft, out the window. I mean, I can't disappoint. There's never yet been a perfect show, so I might as well keep the streak alive. We're nearing 10 years now. Just might as well keep it going. Let you down easy in the first minute. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We are live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. I could say something about analytics, but baseball is so heavily reliant on them, depending on upon who's the manager and who the club is. But what I love and what is emphasized over and over in postseason play, whether it's baseball or football or hockey or basketball or soccer or golf, is analytics, formulas, math cannot measure how a human will respond to pressure. And even if we have a large sample size of how that human will respond to pressure, analytics don't take into account weather. Not generally. By the way, did you see it was raining in Los Angeles? Of all the juke joints in town, it was raining in LA. I was told that never happened. We can't use analytics to determine how a 40-year-old pitcher might perform in the postseason or how a guy will respond when mentally he can't help but think about the last time he was in that situation. Or how about an athlete who's been coming closer and closer and closer but doesn't have the breakthrough until the second playoff series? Great example of that on Tuesday. So I do appreciate the unlikely moments, the unexpected clutch performances. There we go. I mean, it was really not that difficult. Actually, it is. I mean, it's funny because I know I talk for a living, but just trust me. Take my word for it. It's After Hours on Facebook and on Twitter, After Hours CBS. If you want to vote for TD of the Week, we'll let you hear the candidates again this hour if you haven't yet cast your ballot. And as always, you are free to write in your own candidate for any of our polls. Mortified on Monday, TD of the Week. I actually asked producer Jay if we should put up a poll that inquired of you. Which game would you rather watch 10 times if you had to? Let's say someone offered you, is $5,000 enough, Jay? Would you take $5,000? Well, you and I are broke because we work in radio. So I shouldn't say that. We're not broke. We don't have lots of extra. There's not a lot of disposable income when you work in radio. So just, is $5,000 enough, do you think, to offer people for watching 10 times the game between the Colts and the Broncos from last Thursday?
I do think that some people would take that $5,000.
I mean, I would.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good amount, but I think there still will be people who would say, I need a little more. That game was that bad.
Okay, well, let's just say we'll go with $2,500. I mean, I don't have it, so don't be looking at me. Let's just say for $2,500, you have to watch either the Broncos and the Colts over and over. Remember, there were no touchdowns, and it went into overtime. Oy, that's like torture. Or you have to watch the Commanders and the Bears 10 times, not knowing yet how it's going to go.
I'd have to go with the Commanders, I think, because at least you get the element of surprise. But then you got to keep watching it, right? You got to watch it 10 times more after
that. Wait, Commanders and Bears. You don't Commanders just get to watch the Commanders.
Trust me, I don't want to.
The Commanders at least have got some offense. I mean, Carson Wentz is a roller coaster ride, but the guy can throw the ball.
That's for sure. Yeah, they could be. It could be exciting. I guess it could.
Justin Fields gives us some electric moments. Just, ew, there's a lot of punts surrounding. Like, the punts threaten to bury the electric moments.
Yeah, I feel like, boy, at least with Carson, he's usually the one who gets himself into trouble, but then he comes out of it, then he gets back into trouble, then he gets, he's like, he's a one-man show.
Carson never met a throw he didn't think he could make. Not just that, but he generally believes that the way out of any kind of trouble is just to chuck and duck. Just keep on chucking. Not trucking. Well, that too. Just keep on chucking. So, yeah, we were thinking initially about doing some kind of a poll in which you would we would ask you, which game would you rather watch 10 times? That's mean, though. I feel bad.
It is a little mean.
It is a little mean. I try not to be a mean girl. I'm actually not a mean girl. I'm the one who cries when other people cry, so I'm not a mean girl. But that, I feel terrible about that. You got to stick up for the little guy, though. Although, ever since I found out that the photographer that Devontae Adams pushed over filed a police report, now I have a little less sympathy for him.
It ruins it a little bit,
He actually says he has injuries. Now, if he has injuries and there is no police report, there's no way to document except for the, 5 million views of the various videos that are out there. So I suppose that's all been entered into evidence. But a lot of times, for instance, if you get into a fender bender and there's, I learned this the hard way once. Want to hear this crazy story? I was driving a rental car in Chicago. I was there for, I think it was a Stanley Cup game, and I was doing a couple of shows from there. And so I was leaving the studio in downtown Chicago at 5 o'clock in the morning Central Time. The show was over. And I was really excited, headed home to my, well, not home, but headed to my cousin's to get a few hours of sleep because my cousin lives in the area. And a teenage girl who had a passenger in her car, she was in the center lane. I was in the left lane because I was about to veer to the left and get on the highway. She cuts right across the front of the rental car bumper to turn left into McDonald's. Like, literally turns like 90 degrees to the left right across my bumper. Never, I don't know what she was doing. Well, actually, she said to me afterwards, I put on my blinker. Oh,
yeah,
so like automatically my car just disappears. Like my car's not there because you put on your blinker, or I'm supposed to jam on my brakes because you put on your turn signal.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, yeah. So I turn into the parking lot because she smashed the front of this rental car's bumper, and she begs me not to call the police. I mean, begs me. She's 16 years old. She said, I just got my license. I'm so sorry. Do you think we could buff it out? I was like,
can we buff it out?
Yeah, not just buff it out, but there was damage. You can't buff out damage. Anyway, she begged me. So I said, okay, but I'm going to need your insurance information. And she gave me her insurance card. Oh, wow. I took photos of it. I wrote stuff down. I wrote down her phone number, all that. And so then I get home the next day. I call my insurance company. My insurance company calls her insurance company. Her insurance company calls the family of the young woman. Do you know what they did? Deny that she was driving the car. They refused to take responsibility. They said our daughter was not driving. She did not have the car. That wasn't us. They wouldn't let the insurance company talk to the daughter, right? So the parents refused to put her on the phone and refused to take responsibility for it and refused to allow her to, file an insurance report or anything like that. So my insurance company comes back to me and says, actually, not my insurance company. The rental car company comes back to me and says, sorry, there's nothing we can do. Her parents say she wasn't in the car and they and there's no police report. So the lady on the phone said to me is always call the police, if it's something really small. Because when you have people who are dishonest and there's no police report, then there's nothing that we can do. We weren't there. You know, we believe you, obviously, right. And there's damage to the car. I took photos of the vehicle. I told the rental car company what happened, but she said even though we have their phone number, we have their insurance information, the parents are, you know, denying any cooperation. And so for that reason, we can do nothing about it. It's essentially your word against theirs, and there's nothing we can do.
So nothing ever happened.
No, I had to pay for it out of pocket.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, I could have filed it with my insurance company, yeah, but I didn't want my insurance to go up.
Right.
And I mean, the rental car company said, we're gonna fix it for relatively cheap. We'll pay the deductible, but you're going to have to pay the extra. So yeah, that's why. So back to Devontae Adams, yeah, and the photographer. I'm stunned to hear that he's claiming injuries. So I'm a little stunned. Maybe he fell on his back. Maybe it was roughing the passer. I don't know. Maybe he did get hurt, and I shouldn't be snarky. I'm not really. Just I was a little surprised that he was saying he got injured on the fall. However, if there's no police report, even though there are like a million videos out there, you need a police report to document initially. That's why law enforcement always encourages you to go and file a report and right away if there is an assault or any type of a crime that you believe has been committed, because without a police report, it becomes really difficult to move forward, or in the case of insurance companies, to do anything with an insurance company. So I learned the hard way. My mom said to me, always call the police. Always call the police, no matter how minor you think the incident is. Always call the police. Because otherwise, the other person can claim either it was completely your fault, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got to try that next time it's my fault.
Jay!
Totally kidding.
Oh my gosh, you would not.
I would never do that. I'm always very honest.
Holy cow. Okay, that threw me for a loop. Don't do that. I hope that you would be the kind of person who would leave a note if something happened.
I would leave a note.
Okay, good. Phew. Anyway, I learned the hard way. So anybody else out there who's never been in that situation, just take my word for it. Always call the police. That had nothing to do with anything except for Devontae Adams and the photographer, who apparently has filed a police report. How did I get on that tangent from baseball?
That's because he even filed a police report and it just came
up.
He
did.
And then,
he did. Oh, you know what else I saw that's funny? This actually did make me laugh. The streaker that Bobby Wagner tackled,
yeah,
claims that he has a concussion because his head got slammed to the turf. Do you think he's been watching Tua reruns? He's been watching the NFL and everything they're talking about with guys getting their heads smashed onto the ground? Well, hey, genius, how about you don't trespass and run onto a football field where you're not supposed to be? He's lucky he's not in jail.
Like he's not killed. I mean, if you're on the field like that, you assume all the risk, right? You're trespassing.
And he's actually claiming he has a concussion, and that's why he's going to, is he suing Bobby Wagner?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the, are you kidding me?
It's.
Grow up.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I'm just going to borrow a Troy Aikman phrase and tell him to take the dress off, which I'm totally being sarcastic. I don't actually like that phrase. In fact, I went through our Facebook page on Tuesday, Jay, because we were asking people about roughing the passer. Do you know the number of people that use the word sissy or girls or dresses, or as if because the quarterbacks are not taking hits, they must be females? Like, oh my gosh. By the way, I blocked every single one of those people. Not only did, because some of them were vulgar in their responses about girls in their dresses and what happened. So I not only blocked, but deleted all those. Like, what is it about some people that if you think a male is weak or you think the game is soft, it must mean you're a girl? Like, how is that an insult? First of all, I'm tougher than most of you idiots. I mean, come on, that's just wrong. And so I don't appreciate that Troy Aikman said that, but when it comes to that streaker, he's the only guy who can get it.
I mean, also for the fact that on both of these hits, the Brady and the Carr one, they did get smashed to the ground. That's why there was a penalty called.
I don't know about smashed.
Well, they got hit. I mean, it's not like they like didn't get hit. They still got hit. I'm sure it didn't feel good. So
it is football, Jay.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, it's ridiculous to call them soft because they are still taking the hits.
True. If you actually think Tom Brady is soft or girly, then you're just not paying attention.
Right.
Oh my gosh. The man's 45 years old and is still out there kicking a double curvy roads. Okay, on that note, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And as I say, I didn't love the Troy Aikman line. I kind of hate how sexist it is. But the number of people who tried to trot that out on our Facebook page, you all got banned, or at the very least, your comments got deleted. You're talking to a girl, you dummy. Just, I will never understand how people do not get that. You're insulting women on a Facebook page that belongs to a woman's show. I mean, I had a program director tell me years ago, never overestimate the intelligence of your audience.
He's an idiot.
I know the majority of you are smarter than that, but there's always people. There's a bad apple that spoils the bunch, or there's a dum-dum in every room.
He's an idiot.
Including our Facebook page, where I found a few. All right, we're going to start with the National League, the latest game, and we'll work our way backwards. So it was actually an American League sandwich in between two National League games, all four, and they had some good drama to them. I hope you enjoyed the first day of the divisional series. We'll get the four games in a row, the quadruple header. Was it Friday again, right? They all play on Friday, and I think Sunday, too, if necessary, which, okay, I'm kind of hoping it's not necessary for all four to play on Sunday. I mean, can we spread it out a little bit, please? Well, I barely survived last Sunday. Jay didn't survive, by the way. He's lost a bunch of brain cells. He's not.
All gone.
He's not the same.
Completely gone.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Clevinger delivered. Freeman on deck. He will watch Trey Turner round the bases. The home run. Trey Turner, 21 home runs during the regular season. Second batter of the game, and the Dodgers take a 1-0 lead. Clevinger to Muncy to 3-1. Ground ball, left side, base hit. Rounding third, coming home to score is Will Smith. Max Muncy goes the other way, hits against the ship. Smith comes in to score, and the Dodgers take a 2-0 lead.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
They jumped out early, did the Dodgers, against the NL West division rival Padres. This game taking place at Dodger Stadium. You hear it with Charlie Steiner on the Dodgers radio network. And maybe at that point you thought the game was over because Julio Urias was on the mound. But the Padres were able to do something against him that had not happened since early July. Julio had not given up three runs in a game. Forget in an inning. He had not given up three runs in a start since early July. But the Padres' offense is potent. And, of course, they've been locked into this playoff mode for quite a while. Not so much because the NL West was in play. It feels like the Dodgers clinched that division title 6 weeks ago. But because they were battling other challengers for the NL wild card. And so they'd kind of been living on the edge and playing on the edge and then having to go to Citi Field and play three games in hostile territory against the New York Mets. So again, they've had that sense of urgency and they were going to keep hacking.
Nola swings, hits it in the air to left field. Thompson over towards the line. Kim gonna tag. Thompson makes the catch. Kim on his way. Here's the throw to the plate. The tag is not in time.
This now has the feel of a postseason game. The early part of the game, it looked like the Dodgers are gonna blow out the Padres. Well, the Padres have gotten themselves back into this game. The 1-2. Hard shot. Backhanded stab by Lux. Throws the second out of second on the first. Double play! What a play by Lux, who throws to Turner, who fires a seed to first. Myers out by a step, and the inning is over. A spectacular play turned in by Lux and Turner, and then at the receiving end, Freeman. Wow.
Just trying to make a play for Evan in that situation, knowing we got to get that lead runner there, and then just trying to make a good feed for Trey to come across the bag and not, you know, get himself killed when Manny's sliding into him. But yeah, that's it. You know, pitchers did a good job bearing down in that situation.
That's Gavin Lux talking about that big double play in the fifth inning. Evan Phillips, the reliever he was referring to on the mound after Julio had been chased from the game. So the Padres were able to score three runs in the fifth, and then they had two in scoring position when Lux was able to spark that double play. So it was massive. You hear Jesse Agler and Charlie Steiner on Padres and Dodgers radio. That was it for the scoring. The final is 5-3, and so there was nothing through the late stages of the game, not in the sixth, not in the seventh, not in the eighth. But in case you were thinking it was going to be an easy-peasy ninth with an experienced closer, well, think again. You may have seen the news earlier on Tuesday that Craig Kimbrell, the Dodgers closer, to replace Kenley Jansen. Craig Kimbrell was left off the NLDS roster. And so the idea now is that they're going to try out different guys and that Dave Roberts is going to play this as situationally as possible. And so the guy that he used in the ninth inning tonight was Chris Martin. Oh my gosh, the organist at Dodger Stadium after. So he had a comebacker. He stabbed it. It was actually off to his left. The first hitter he faced in the ninth inning with the Dodgers up two runs, hits this comebacker, is between him and the first baseline. But because, was it Justin Turner who was, no, Turner plays third. My gosh, who was playing first? Oh, Freeman, sorry. Freeman was so far back that it was Martin who stabbed it, and actually just his momentum carried it right over to first base. So he was able to like do one unassisted. And then the organist started playing Coldplay music. Because Chris Martin's the lead singer of Coldplay.
Right? Nice. Very nice.
That was kind of funny. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So, yes, there were opportunities for the Padres, but they were not able to get anything else beyond that fifth inning. And Chris Martin does pitch not a 1-2-3, but he faced four batters for the three-out save in the ninth. So the Padres are 0-4 with runners in scoring position. They leave four on base. Meanwhile, the Dodgers go 3-8 with runners in scoring position. They did have some other opportunities, but weren't able to capitalize on those either. And then coming up on Wednesday, because the National League will play on Wednesday, it is Yu Darvish for the Padres. So Yu Darvish against his former club and his former teammate in Clayton Kershaw. So kind of interesting to think about that matchup and the way these two guys are coming together. So Manny Machado said, hey, it's not all bad, the fact that we were able to come up with some runs and show some life.
We got into the bullpen, we got that starter out of the game early, and, you know, we kept battling. I mean, it was a good game overall. You know, came up a little short, but, you know, move on to tomorrow.
Exciting, man. You know, Dodger Stadium in the postseason, it's honestly kind of a dream for any ball player. You know, there's nothing like Dodger Stadium in October, and you know, tonight proved it. It was electric out there. It was fun, a little stressful, but you know, it is a postseason. That's how it's going to be every night.
Max Muncy with an RBI single in their first flurry of runs, and the Dodgers, just as Manny Machado said about them chasing Julio and getting into the bullpen, the Dodgers chased Mike Clevinger out of the third inning. So he only goes 2 2/3. He gave up four runs on six hits and had just 60 pitches. So they were on his pitches. They were on him right away in the first couple innings to get him out of there. Now, there's always some concern when you have a team that's on a bye and then sits around and doesn't have to play for a while. I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag on this first day of the division series, and we'll explain coming up. But for the Dodgers, they have so many guys who can hit. They have such a potent lineup. And they're also an experienced club, right? Even if they have only just won the World Series in 2020, a bunch of these guys have been to not just the World Series, but other NLCS stages. And so they're kind of used to what you need to do, and they understand what you need to do to amp it back up for the postseason.
We did a pretty good job of trying to stay locked in and engaged in our inner squads. And it's tough, you know, you can't compare a playoff atmosphere, but I thought we did a really good job, you know, competing against each other and trying to stay fresh.
So the Dodgers get that first win over the Padres, but if you expand it out to the last 29 games between San Diego and Los Angeles, the Dodgers have their number right now. They are 5-24 against the Dodgers in their last 29. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything in the postseason. I'm not a big believer that if you've got a history on your side, it automatically means that it's always going to go that way. I mean, that's just not how history works. But I do know that the Dodgers are not intimidated by them, and they've got a lot of experience. And to that end, I had indicated one of the things that I like about these divisional matchups is the fact that you do have three of them that are taking place intra-division. So Padres, Dodgers, Phillies, Braves, and then we also have the other American League series, which is, don't tell me why am I like all of a sudden blanking. Yes. So the Yankees, Guardians is the only one that's not Mariners and Astros. But what I heard, and we'll get to that game, but what I heard from Justin Verlander, Marco Belletti, is that he actually said that. He said they're not intimidated by us. There's a lot of familiarity. They've faced Verlander how many times over the course of the last, well, whenever, I guess, 2017? 16? When did they win the World Series?
17.
So he joined them at that trade deadline, and the Mariners have to see him over and over and over again. And they're familiar with the ballpark, right? So every ballpark's different. Every ballpark sounds different, has different dimensions. The ball bounces differently. But the benefit of facing a division opponent is that you are already familiar with the ballpark. You know all the pitchers. There's just familiarity that breeds contempt, certainly between the Mariners and Astros. But there's no secrets there. So it's less intimidating, I would think, for a team that's going into hostile territory against, obviously, a club that won so many games. In the case of the Astros, what, 106 wins?
Yeah, I mean, was it 18, 19 times you see each other during
19,
the season?
Yeah.
So. That's definitely part of it. To me, I think it's just the idea of there's nothing to hide in the fact of how they pitch to you. There's no batter that's not used to whether it's Verlander or anybody that's coming out of the pen, because that's a big part of it too. Like starters, you may have seen at some point during the year, you know, it usually happens, even if it's non-division, you'll find a guy. You don't usually see everybody out of the bullpen. Mm-mm. There is nobody on either side that they can deploy from the bullpen that you haven't seen in a big spot. You can't tell me that, you know, your Dan Alvarez hadn't seen Robbie Ray before, today. So that's definitely a part of it, that it takes away that part of the equation. There's no uncertainty at all.
Right. And even if you haven't necessarily faced the guy, you've at very least seen him work, right? So whether you had a chance, like if someone comes, what do they have to face now? Four batters?
Three
batters. Okay. So you may have missed a guy in a situation, but you're observing from your dugout at the very least.
Yeah, and like
tape,
I said,
obviously.
19 games, you probably saw him. You know what I mean? Like there's not a lot of secrets at that point.
I love that.
You know, 19 times over the course of a year, there's a good chance that if you're playing in the playoffs and the guy's coming out of the bullpen, you're both big parts of your team.
Right.
So it's hard to imagine, unless there's an injury, that you haven't seen each other at some point during the year.
The Padres are probably thinking, not again, not again. But
yeah,
what are you going to do?
I think in that spot, I don't think they're intimidated. I think it's just kind of like you get to the point where you're just looking at it like, what do we have to do to get over the hump? Like, what
guys,
do we have to do? What do we have to do? And for the same thing for the Mariners, this is hopefully going to help them, because I got to tell you, that's a knockout blow that destroys a series.
Okay. But didn't they just do it to Toronto to win their wild card series, right? They were down 7-1.
Right.
So 8-1 in the seventh inning, something like that, sixth inning. And they were able to come back. So I guess they've been on both ends of it.
Yeah, it was all the same day, though. It's a little different when it's the gut punch, and now you got to get a day off to sit on it. You got to hope that the day off is going to be able to get you to, I guess, kind of circle the wagons. But that's tough. Now you're sitting on that for a full day before you go back out there for a game two. Oof.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to overcome.
It's crazy in sports and really in life, too, what a difference a year can make. Because Robbie Ray is the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner. Like, how many people remember that? I mean, of course, he does. His family, his teammates. But, I mean, he's not pitched great. He's especially going back to their series just last weekend. And now he's going to be in a closer role, or a relief role?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Was that just for today?
Yeah, that was today. I think Scott Servais was just looking at it. He wanted he didn't trust Paul Sewald, and obviously, you know.
Obviously.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's not a lot of guys in that bullpen that I think he just wanted to get out of there with the win. Like, you could feel it slipping away. And he thought Robbie Ray would be that one guy, that one last bullet to be able to get through there. Because if I'm not mistaken, Ray gets the ball in game three. You know, like, where else are they going? Logan Gilbert's going to get it. You know, Luis Castillo is their guy. He's going to get the ball in game two. Where are you going in game three? You're probably going to Robbie Ray.
Yeah.
So I think he was just trying to get anybody in that spot not named Castillo to see if he can get an out there and get out of this game. And Robbie Ray came up small.
Whatever it takes. You know, it sticks with me. I actually texted Jay about this. The hit by pitch. Sewald puts a runner on. And, and actually, it was Kyle. Was it Kyle Tucker? Who was it? It wasn't Tucker. It was Hensley. Hensley, that, and the ball hits his uniform.
Right.
It doesn't even hit a body part. It's just that he kind of backs up and his uniform is bunching out and it hits his jersey. And so that runner ends up being, well, the tying one, of course. But like if he's not on, they're maybe still playing, or at the very least, they have another opportunity.
And like I said, I mean, it's also a tough spot, too. Like, I don't want to pile on Robbie Ray. One, you're facing Yordan Alvarez, who's one of the best hitters in all of baseball. But more importantly, and again, it's a tough spot, you're a starter. You get charged with coming in the ninth inning with two on and two out. Like, that's a tough spot for a reliever. Now, again, I don't want to dismiss you. It's your job. But I can't imagine Robbie Ray.
Well for it.
Right, but I can't imagine Robbie Ray walked into today going, yeah, I might be needed in the ninth inning. Like, I don't think he expected to pitch today. And I know you got to say, wow, it's all hands on deck in the playoffs.
I don't know. I kind of read some stuff where Scott Servais said that there's a chance we could use him out of the bullpen.
Yeah, there's always a chance we could use a lot of guys out of the bullpen. I don't think Robbie Ray really thought he was going to be asked to get Yordan Alvarez in the ninth inning with two on and two out.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Those pants got a little tighter in the ninth inning, that's for sure.
Well, I don't even know what that means.
Really? You ever seen Robbie Ray? Those pants are a little too tight, buddy.
Okay. Let's not take personal shots here.
Come on. I'm not the first one to say it. You know, maybe get out of the schmedium and it would help you out a little bit.
Schmedium. You're a mess. Whatever it takes. Okay. It's our hump show, middle show of the work week, which means a little bit later on in the middle of the show, you get to ask Amy anything. So send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Or our Facebook page, Producer Jay put those posts up for you. When we return, I mean, we've been talking about some of the big moments. We'll dive into the other National League series, which features the defending World Series champs.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Get on the board first here in the first inning in the pitch. Castellanos swings, lines it to right. Acuna coming on, and he has to play it on a bounce. And Nick Castellanos has given the Phillies a 1-0 lead. The Phillies strike first today in Atlanta. Reed comes set, looks at second. He kicks. Here's the pitch. Swung on, loop towards right. Diving. Arcia couldn't get it. It's a base hit. Harper is coming home to score. Castellanos is into third. And Alec Bohm with a two-strike base hit to right has put the Phillies up 2-0. Reed ready at the belt. He kicks the 0-1. Swing and a line drive up the middle, a base hit. Into center field. Castellanos around third. They're waving to the plate. Here's the throw from Harris. It's not in time. Castellanos scores, and Gene Segura with a two-out RBI hit. And it's 4-1 Phillies. The pitch. Swung on, line to left. That's a base hit. Out of the reach of Swanson. One run is home. Here comes Hoskins home. He will score. And Nick Castellanos with his third hit of the game. He's driven in two more, and the Phillies lead it 6-1.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Scott Fransky and company on Phillies Radio. The wild card team, the other wild card team from the NL East, gets 7 runs on 12 hits, but was able to jump on top of the Braves early. 7 in the first 5 innings. And that was it. They needed to stand up. They were able to hit Max Fried early and often and chase him from the game. But you know these are the World Series champions, and they tend to keep coming. They're a bit relentless. That's one of their hallmarks, and they have a lineup that's stacked. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Castellanos, a name that you heard a lot over the course of this series opener in the National League, taking place at Truist Park in Atlanta. A couple of things to keep in mind about him. He was 0-for-7 in the wildcard series. Not just that, but he's had a really tough season. He's been injured a bunch, and his numbers are off. He's scuffled. He's struggled. He's the guy I was thinking about when I said earlier this hour, sometimes you get unlikely athletes who will step up. The athletes you're not expecting. Just from the Yankees Guardian series. It was, I mean, we knew there could be some home runs, right? Because that's Yankee Stadium and that's Gerrit Cole. But it's Stephen Kwan who ends up hitting his first ever postseason hit. Like, and it turns out to be a home run off Gerrit Cole. First ever playoff hit. And so you never know who's going to step up or how they're going to step up. In the case of Castellanos, he's got a lot of experience, but it's been a season, I'm sure, of frustration, maybe some anxiety, anger, discouragement, all of those human emotions when things are not working out no matter how hard we try. So the Phillies touch up Max Fried for 6 runs. I think only 4 of them were earned. 6 runs on 8 hits and a walk, and they chase him in the 4th inning. Again, they've got the 7 runs for the first 5 innings, and they're feeling good. But these are the Braves, and this is their park.
Braves have 2 base hits in the inning already. And the 2-2. Swung on a fly ball to center. Brandon Marsh back, still back. Back to the warning track. Back to the wall. It's out of here! It's gone! Straight away center field, and it's a 1-run game. Enormous homer by Matt Olson to straightaway center. And it had just enough to get out of here.
I was watching that one live. Sometimes I have games on DVR and I go back and forth. And in the case of this game, I had been rolling it on my DVR because I wanted to be able to sleep a little later than the first pitch. But when I woke up, before I rewound, I just turned the game on and this is what I saw. The 9th inning with the Atlanta Braves. And I watched it build and I watched it build and then boom. The Matt Olson home run, and Atlanta was on fire. That's the call on Braves radio. Now, they're within a run, and they're not done. They still have life. In fact, there was only 1 out at that point in the 9th inning.
Waiting on the 0-2 from Eflin. Righty-righty matchup. The 0-2 pitch. Get in the air to right field. Might drop in. Charging Castellanos. He slides, and he has got it. Wow, what a catch. That's the catch of his career right there. Robs William Contreras what would have been a bloop single to right field. And he charges in, lays out, and somehow squeezes it. Unreal.
That William Contreras liner turns out to be the 2nd out of the 9th inning, and it stymied the rally. In fact, it squashed the rally. And fitting, of course, that it's Castellanos. So, yes, lots of fireworks with Matt Olson, who would love to have a ring with the Atlanta Braves since he wasn't part of their World Series run last year, but Castellanos. And really, that's the story of the opening game for the Phillies in Atlanta. He has not just that great defense, but 3 hits and 3 RBI, and almost every single one of his teammates raving about him once this game was over and once the Phillies had secured the W. But Castellanos himself on that catch and what he saw.
I saw him swing, and then I saw him hit it, and it was just going towards me, and I ran and caught it as best I could, and it worked out. I mean, that was kind of what was going through my head, honestly, was I was up there and do anything I could to not let it hit the ground.
Castellanos telling you what he saw. I saw him swing, and then I saw him hit it.
Baseball sometimes sucks.
Him. Oh my gosh. He did have a season that was all up in his feels. But on this night, he's got all of his teammates raving about him and, of course, raving about the win.
I thought he played great. I mean, from at bat one to, you know, being in the 9th inning right there. I thought our whole lineup really had a really good plan today against Fried. Time of hitting with 2 outs also. Just really, I think, all around. I thought everybody did a great job, and what a team win.
He pretty much won the game for us today. That play out there in right field was incredible. That just solidified a great game for him all around.
I feel like he's been one swing away all year, right? You know, everybody knows he can hit. And, you know, for him to show up here, is, I'm sure it feels good for him, but I love seeing it.
So first Bryce Harper, then JT Realmuto, and then Alec Bohm on watching Nick succeed and finally break through. And Alec says, I feel like he's been one swing away pretty much all season. As for Matt Olson, first time through a playoff series or playoff game, I should say, with the Braves.
Something that we do, we always find a way to battle and stay in the game. And, you know, it's good to have a little momentum there at the end. Obviously fell up a little short, but yeah, you know, come back, try to get a win tomorrow.
Max Fried was so excited when he got the call for game number one. This is why you play baseball. Didn't quite go the way that he wanted. But again, the fact that these are divisional opponents means they've seen Max Fried.
Frankly, I just didn't do my job today. The guys were counting on me to go out there and have a good start and keep it a close game. And I just let it get out of the way too quick.
But in the fourth, when he came off, he went down. I know he's mad and everything. I just want to make sure he's okay physically. And he just, kind of wasn't firing today, pretty much.
And so the Phillies are able to grab that opening win on the road at the Braves. And actually, if you have FS1 or you want to see the game, haven't seen it yet, they're replaying it in the wake of the Dodgers-Padres game that just ended not that long ago. Phillies and Braves in a replay on FS1. Do you have any questions for me? Ask Amy anything. That's what we do every week on The Hump Show. As long as I'm here, it's not as much fun to ask Shep anything or ask who else? Rich anything. Nah, it doesn't have quite the alliteration. So on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.